of the world, we did manage to do this before recordings, so it's not, you know, the end of the world, but it does help us with our understanding of how things work now. Hopefully we are now recording the session, October 22nd, collective bargaining.
2015.
This is throwing us off, not having a mic here to
We don't have mics, we don't have our little recorder person, so and what's Shirley doing down there?
Well, I'm trying to get a call from someone who's going to come, so there's no cell phone service for me right now, that's why I'm doing
this. Well, I suppose...
He's got to be Mike for a few minutes.
First order of business, pass out minutes. Three.
Thank you.
You guys have the rest.
Today's session goes till 5?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we lengthened all our sessions to try to... We're still trying to finish, believe it or not.
It was 4.
This isn't purgatory. There is an
end. There is an end.
There is an end. There's a goal line in sight. One of which is not particularly desirable, isn't it?
Jesse has a... Oops.
Oh, no.
Jesse has a...
That, oh, yeah, you just signed as guest, yeah.
Football game time.
Uh-oh. You have to leave early.
3 or 4.
That's all right.
Our team's down.
She's playing at equal numbers.
She can't drive yet. So drive.
When does that blessed event occur?
In another year, she'll get a driver's license permit.
I think that's a mixed blessing. On the one hand, it's fine. It's good for you because you don't have to haul her everywhere, but then you have to worry about her out there on the roads.
So Barbara just said that the minutes look good to her.
Okay, good. Off to a roaring start.
We've approved the minutes.
Okay.
Where would you like to start?
I see
you have a bigger pile of papers than we do, so we'll let you start first.
Okay. I'm going to put these two aside. I'm going to put this one aside. How about we start with, good heavens, how many copies did we make here? Actually, it's not that we have that many. We just have a million copies of each one. All right, how about we start with the salaries?
Okay.
Does that work for everybody? How many copies do we have here?
There we go.
You need 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. You're only going to get...
I just need one for my records.
You need one, okay. I'm out. We only made 7 copies, because we never know.
Do you want me to make some more?
No, I mean, you can't, I don't think it's that necessary. People can share. Okay, on salaries, I think you made a counter proposal to our proposal last time. We looked at that and we came back with a counter proposal of our own. We have now, our total now is 3%, and that is divided between a 1% across the board and a 2% merit. The across the board will take effect the first pay period in January, but in order to compensate for that period between August 8th, and we're going to provide a one-time payment for everyone in the unit of $1,375. And Isha, our comp manager, could explain how we got to that number if you needed it, but...
Yeah. Just I think probably you were thinking the same thing that we had in the back of our head as a possible proposal. So.
The comp manager, the payroll manager.
Okay.
Sorry.
Money, it's okay. I just think money, and I look at two of them.
So what we did was we looked at all the in-unit faculty, what the current salary was as of that time frame, went ahead and added 3%, and then came up with a total for everyone, collectively how much money that would have been, and then divided it by the number of employees in that group. So that's what, the average.
Yeah, I mean, obviously some people will do a little better, some people will do a little worse, but it will help the people at the lower end of the scale,
right, exactly,
which is what you want.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
And I think that was the only change that we made. Unless Charlie's thinking of something.
Just clearing your throat.
Things, so I'm just clearing all kinds.
Yeah.
Basically, we
upped our number, our total, and we put in the bonus payment.
Yeah, because the legislature would do it.
Right.
We were just discussing the legislatively mandated ones.
Yes.
With the date in there, is this still a couple months away from the end, but the legislature won't do anything.
The budget for 2015 is done.
Yeah,
they're moving
that
on.
That amount of time, I don't think that's a danger.
2016.
Okay.
Which we are hoping, because they started meeting earlier this year, that we will actually get some decent budget numbers by around March from the legislature. You know, who knows?
You're going to go on record as jinxing it?
No, I said hoping.
We'll see.
But it is the Florida legislature after all.
Okay.
But they're talking, but they are already talking budget numbers with the governor, so that's a hopeful sign.
Okay.
You want to...
Do you have another one that you want us to?
Sure.
If we're going to take a caucus,
you've
got another one for
okay,
us to
okay, well,
consider
we've got 17, which you already have.
Right.
Okay, so you can caucus about that or talk about that, unless you've already done that.
Yeah, we spent today doing that, so
okay.
We can talk about that one with you whenever you're ready.
Okay, let's talk about that, and then we'll move on to one more before, because that'll give us something to talk about in our caucus.
Okay, all right, so... And we have a question for you in Article 17 that will also pertain to, sorry, they're not all in color. Bring some of those back
that's
to
okay.
Our side.
Okay.
Will also pertain to the appendices.
Oh.
My printer was that done wrong. Oh, this is UFS.
I don't know if you wanted to ask them any question, yeah, about that. But.
Okay, so, well, we can talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah, let's just not forget about it. Let's see, so, yeah, I think everything, all the changes that were made in the document through section 17.5 we had accepted. You can see a mm-hmm. couple of changes in the margins that are indicated there, and those are just deleting a space or after a comma, something small like that. So then in 17.6
just want you to ask them about, they're saying 2017 there, and then they say 2018 there.
Oh, we have a discrepancy there?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, we're going to go back to Article 23 because Barbara just picked up on an internal discrepancy in the proposal.
Okay.
So why don't you go ahead and take it since you spotted it.
On page 2, 23.8... ADI,
mm-hmm.
it says on May 8th, 2016 through May 6th, 2017, the university may provide ADI.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the next page, under C, the university's ability to provide ADI shall expire May 6, 2018. Which did you intend? 17 or 18?
I think it would be, well, I'm going to let Charlie.
Hold on a second. The contract ends on August 31st.
Yeah, but she's talking.
2016 for 23. So.
All right, but.
So neither one of them, I guess, are right, right?
Yeah, neither one of them are right. So, but if we are.
August, what is the day it ends?
We usually end ADI on August 31st because that's when the contract ends.
But it would probably be August 31st, 2016, not 2018.
Because that's the end of Article 23 because it,
yeah,
it's renegotiated.
Right. It gets renegotiated every year.
So the answer is neither one of those are right. Just make that August 31st,
good catch.
2016.
So is the beginning time correct?
That should be May 2015.
Well, currently, the current...
Yeah, because they
the
have until
one goes
May.
Until May, right?
Mm-hmm. So just pick
up... Yes, right. This will pick up where that one left off.
So it's only 4 months?
Right. Mm-hmm. Because it got...
We're in it.
Right
now.
Right.
Got it.
You're soaking in it.
So the date again is, the correct date is August
31st,
2016.
Yes.
Okay. Good catch.
Hmm. I keep one way or another.
You could extend it out, but then when you start negotiating Article 23, it would supersede it. You could do that, I guess.
Okay, so now we're back to
16.
Article 17. And so, in 17.6, the only suggestion that you had made that mm-hmm. we had left is struck out was the phrase "and university policies," just because it's a federal act.
Federal act, we got to do it anyway.
Yeah, and so that's
is
that seem
no.
acceptable?
Yes. That,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that one is there. Then in 17.7. In the top, there's a small text. What we did is, you see the first underlying part that during the 1 year period following the employee becoming a biological parent, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So in the version you gave us, we again had that problem where it was tied to when the child was expected to arrive, and we had talked about what happens with folks who are... or the child is expected on, say, December 20th or something. And so then the leave really would be much more effective for everyone concerned if it were in the spring semester.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to get that in there somehow in a cohesive way. And in looking at the FMLA above it, we notice that, well, there's a one-year period for the FMLA, so why are we reinventing the wheel? Why don't we just use the same language down below it? And so then that covers that time period.
Okay.
And then the part below it, we went back to our original language because what we were concerned about is the phrase, or the employee becomes a legal guardian of a child. So there's that period when that guardianship is being established, you know, like the really horrible examples we talked about last time. I'm trying not to mention by name. So you'd have that period when you're in limbo. And so it's the same idea that, again, you know, the event has occurred, the faculty member has the responsibility, and we're trying to maximize their effectiveness for the university and for their own career and things. So that's why we thought that our language capture that a little bit better. So that's why we made that one. Down below in three.
Wait, before you go there, can I just ask why domestic partner is there?
Yeah, question.
Spouse now covers domestic partner, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. It covers same-sex domestic partners that are married, you know, married people. It covers married people, period.
Yeah, I think that was just, we imported that in from the last one, although we're going to come back to a question about that later, so maybe we'll just highlight that one.
Okay.
Lee has a pink highlighter. Can you toss it down to me? So we know that that's in another place, too. Thanks.
How do you know that was John's favorite color?
Not.
Well, hey, at least in October, it better be everybody's favorite color, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
And then in
Rose or Con, I think.
In part three, what we did is try to streamline that part, mm-hmm. because consistency with the goals of the college and division. You know, on the one hand, that's
we pulled that straight out of the AESP language, basically.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we were thinking about, you know, other possibilities like you know, to comply with EEO things, which it's certainly part of the college or division's goals, but you know, are those really separate? And so it just seemed like we could take out a lot of the intervening parts, mm-hmm. and contract that down, because really it struck us as this is more directions that the administration is giving to its own hierarchy than it is mm-hmm. anything to the bargaining unit. So that's why we're suggesting that change.
When you say reviewed by, do you mean not make changes?
Approved. I think that's what she's asking.
Well, we could envision cases where changes might be necessary. And so then I think it's incumbent on the dean or the vice president to communicate those to the chair and to
that there would be an interactive process between the chair and the dean.
Yeah. So we're trying, you know, again, we're trying to make this process as uniform throughout the university as we can get it, because that's part of our difficulty now is that in some units, this is already happening on an informal basis. In other units, it's not happening at all. And so the more we can get it so it's just a, you know, check off the steps procedure, I think the better everybody will feel about it and the more effective it'll be. So that's what we're trying to encompass in that.
I just want to be clear. So I have to make sure the process works, right?
Right.
So I'm looking at this. So the plan gets agreed to and it goes to the dean. And the dean then, it says, reviewed and then forwarded. But it doesn't say the dean has the ability to send it back. So I just want to be clear. You're saying that he does have the ability, that review includes returning it for more work?
Well, the original language didn't say anything about returning it back either. We were trying not to alter your original intent mm-hmm. too far, so maybe we need to talk about what that intent was.
Well, I think the intent was, we've pulled it out of the AESPs and the language, and of course the AESP language, there is that ongoing, I mean, the dean can send it back to the faculty for, you know,
with the AESP, though, the focus is on the entire department or the entire unit
right.
in the abstract. So we can agree on the set of principles that will be used to evaluate the faculty as a whole in that unit. This is specifically about a particular employee, and so in a way you need a little bit better protection in case there is a bias or... Right.
Okay. Yeah, we can work on some language with that maybe when we take our
just
break.
Just wanted to understand what we were all thinking.
Well, what we're thinking about is trying to make this as straightforward a process as we can and effective. And so those are the two, and uniform, I guess that's.
I'm just saying that
we want to make your life easier.
Well, yeah.
What do I do next?
Yeah.
I think that.
Can I say anything about this? And in case, for instance, of a PDL, all they do is review and send on to the next person. They don't have the ability to do anything else. I'm sorry, for some reason, my arm is hurt. They don't have the ability to make any changes or send it back or make anything except for a comment. And that's why I wanted to be clear that that's not necessarily what you're envisioning here.
Right.
Or maybe you are.
Or maybe it is. I think we're...
Yeah, I think, you know, if the dean or vice president sees that there's something that's not consistent, you know, so you can envision this working different ways. One is that there's a department chair who, for whatever reason, doesn't want to allow this to proceed, and so they're being problematic, and then you'd like the dean or vice president to come in and say, you know, you two agreed to it, but this isn't smart. You know, this isn't consistent with what's been done in the unit, and we'd like to see that problem redressed. And on the other hand, it could go the other way, where there's some favoritism, and so one group always gets a non-instructional assignment, and another one always just gets their work hours altered, and so there's some inequity there, and the dean or vice president kind of sitting above may see the pattern emerge and for the same reason say, well, this isn't consistent within your unit.
All right, and that can be very discretionary. So in the event that the dean or vice president determines that the modified work plan does not match the goals or visions, there's no directive for the faculty at that point. There's no directive.
So it could be the dean imposes something or retains it back to the chair of the faculty member, or
Mario, just go back and then what?
Well, ultimately, everything comes will end up being forwarded to our office.
Right.
So, but I mean, you know, we originally had it being, you know, moved out of the purview of just the chair and having the dean having to approve it. You weren't really comfortable with that, so you wanted us to try to come up with some language. We tried to pull something from the AESPs that seemed appropriate, but, you know, at this point I'm like, okay, it's your turn.
Well, we just tried to shorten it, in part because we were concerned about the goals of the college
right.
or division
right.
a little bit being nebulous, that could be anything, but also not maybe being encompassing enough about what are the university's goals or other laws and things like that.
And they also comply with simply duplicate what the dean or the DT does. So it's like duplicating the same task.
Well, we're very happy to get out of this.
Right, that's subjective.
Well,
if you
we almost struck that out, too, because we thought, well, that's internal to the administration.
Yeah, I mean, if you just want to say it should be reviewed by the dean or vice president, but there's no, I mean, who's going to do the ultimate? I mean, in our view, we would, the dean or the vice president, in collaboration with the chair, would be the ultimate, and the faculty member. That would have to be a collaborative effort, but somebody will make the final decision somewhere along the line. Somebody's got to make the final decision. And if there's a dispute, then it comes to our office, which is pretty much how everything works around here. I mean, with faculty, let's be honest, that's pretty much how it works, you know. Whether you bring it to us as a grievance or whether the chair or the dean brings it to us as a problem, you know.
Yeah, we'd love to avoid that, Sherry.
I know. Well, we all would, but that's the reality. So,
we can...
Yeah.
We can think about it during caucus.
Okay.
Maybe
or
both of us will get an inspiration.
But your idea is that the intent is that the dean or the vice president will review it, either approve it, or then if they think it's not appropriate or it's, you know, would go back then and have a conversation with the chair, and the two would come to some sort of conclusion at that point.
And
if they can't.
And the individual.
And the individual,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So find something that, that works.
So that's the intent, okay.
And that's fair and equitable and
so we know the what you're looking for. Maybe we can come up with something.
I think I got something. I just wrote down what you said. Review by the dean of the vice president and either approve or work collaboratively with the employee and supervisor to find
an acceptable solution.
Yeah, mutually
excellent.
Agreeable.
Okay. Yeah.
Mason learning is key.
And that gets out of this.
I'm happy about that, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Did you get that, Charlie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good, I'm going to have to try that. Okay.
And then I think in part one down there, okay, that was your language that was okay, and then we just put for a qualifying event, so because we moved that language up, right below 17.7 in the beginning, don't need to repeat it down below.
Okay.
The underline, that's all from before. On part three, part four, part five. So on part six, because we weren't sure what the expenses would be again, mm-hmm. we just went straight to the article that we're citing over there in the tiny,
sabbatical.
Tiny print, the sabbatical one, and just call it salary and fringe benefits.
That'll work.
We're trying not to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And
I think the expenses was supposed to cover if you go to a conference. That's what that, I think that's what that was supposed to cover. Is that a fringe?
No, that wouldn't be
fringe.
That would be.
Yeah.
That's what that was for. Just so you know.
You can. Would they go to a conference? Would you pay parental leave?
Yeah.
Just saying.
If you had
if you're a male and you.
Well, if you had modified leave, you might.
Modified work duties.
Mm-hmm. It could happen.
Well, but this
but
is
why would you have to pay back?
No, this is only during paid.
This is only during the paid leave.
Parental. This is only during the paid.
Yeah. So you'd have to get permission to do it anyway. So.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Well, and then, the university gets the benefit from that, of the person going and presenting. And.
No, this is if they don't come back, though, then they don't get the benefit.
No, but you get the benefit of them having gone. You wouldn't repay it unless you'd spend it, and you wouldn't be able to spend it unless you'd actually gone to this. The conference, under UCF's name and given your talk or whatever. These reading glasses are driving me nuts. Sorry, Charlie, I couldn't focus on your way down there.
Can you just say sorry, Charlie?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, we say it all the time.
Now I just totally lost my train of thought.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so I just wanted to point out another thing that's come up is that when folks are on these leaves, sometimes they're being told by ORC, for example, that they can't submit grant proposals and stuff during that period, which is totally counterproductive for the employee, for the university, for everybody. So we have to kind of watch out that the message doesn't get misconstrued, that they can't do anything. They've got to stop thinking and things.
Is it for parental leave you're talking about, or sick leave? Because that's a bit different, because sometimes on sick leave, you're really not supposed to, if you're really sick and you're taking off, time, you're not supposed to be
working. Has been more, I can't recall the exact context. It was on some sort of a paid leave. I couldn't tell you if it was sick leave or not.
Probably sick leave. Mm-hmm. Although, as we all know, unless we're at death's door, we tend to still monitor emails and do stuff when we're sick. But
there's a threat of liability to the university.
Yeah, if your doctor said you are not supposed to be working, we don't want you working, because then,
we've had that problem.
Yeah.
Somebody who works on a grant and the UCO is not liable for this extra stress caused by the grant?
Yes. No, yeah. Extra work was caused by working. Extra stress caused by working. They said that you need them. And
we get that every day. Is that different from every day?
Well, yes, but sometimes we have gotten doctors come back and say, well, they had a subsequent bad event. They went out for maybe heart issues, and they worked, they were determined to finish their grant, and they disregarded their doctor's orders, and so they got up and did stuff, and then they had a relapse, and, you know, that was our fault because, you know, we didn't
stop them.
Because we let them work.
Because we let them work,
we
yeah.
Didn't tell them
we didn't tell them that they could not do that while they were on sick leave.
So. Yeah, the cases I heard about is when the person was really close to submitting, and then they were told that they couldn't submit it. And so that was...
There, you know, they're always... Unfortunately, you know, we end up making, just like law, bad facts make bad law.
Tough cases make bad law.
Tough cases make bad law,
yeah.
So,
maybe we need to somehow communicate that or...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more a question of not something that you necessarily want to put in the contract, but just something you want to make sure that you communicate, that we communicate to our administrators and you communicate to your membership.
Right, yeah, because the faculty members are caught totally off guard by that, because they put all the work into it, and then, you know, they get sick before the deadline, and,
yeah.
And then they're still trying to submit it, and then they're told, well, we're
well, and sometimes if it's, yeah.
We get a revise and submit from the general, we'll say, please fix these two sentences. You've got to, like, edit two sentences and send it back, and that's, I mean, not exactly a stressful enterprise, but
no.
Leave it up to the faculty member to decide whether this would be stressful or too stressful.
Leave it up to their attorney.
Yeah.
Yeah, to determine that it is.
Well, let's avoid that. Yeah, so the other parts in under the unpaid parental leave were the same as before. The struck out again is about the when it begins, which because we addressed it earlier.
Okay.
And then we go to the problematic number 5. And so we suggested, for the reasons that we've discussed earlier, reverting back to the status quo language.
Number 5.
The payment for unused sick leave on page 5.
Okay.
And I think there is one more. Yeah, there's some other small. Yeah, there were a couple of things that you struck out with the Florida statutes in places, and so we just left those in sort of the same way that you would leave in the FMLA ones, just so that folks know where to go to reference it. I'm looking at page 9 under the military ones.
Yeah, although some of those have been repealed, and we just haven't bothered to get them out of the contract, but we probably should clean that up at some point.
Okay, well, if you can let us know which ones have been repealed, then we can...
Yeah, or not repealed, but don't apply to us anymore. But.
Then I think the last one... It was on 17.11.
Okay.
Part E, number 1, A. So at the end of that last sentence, your proposal had a tagline about, I think, at least 10 hours per week for that clause to invoke. So where the use of sick leave to cover the employee's contribution to the state insurance program.
Mm-hmm.
And so in sort of the absence of a rationale for that, we just suggested leaving the status quo language.
Where are you, John? I'm sorry,
I'm on page 10, mm-hmm.
17.11. There's a little line
yeah,
inside.
Yeah, a little line. It's on E1A. Yeah, that's what's not showing is there's...
Oh, do you have any type of accrued leave instead of 10 hours? Is that what... I'm sorry.
Well, we weren't... In the absence of understanding why that clause had been added, we just went back to status quo. I mean, we'd be happy to hear why that was added in. We just...
Do you have a HR? Do you have a...
I know the Ben's area, that's from the leave of absence and workers' comp, and then also to do with the benefits team. I think that was just a number of hours, so it covered any employee, and you know, if you think about 1/10 of their pay, that would cover whatever benefits they have in order to continue those payments with the state group insurance. And obviously, if somebody's on some sort of medical leave, they really do need to keep those benefit premiums going, keep their coverage in place. So I think that was...
That was my understanding as well. Yeah. I mean, we can check with Ben during the caucus, but that's what I thought it did. Because it's, you have to have a minimal amount to just cover, just to cover your insurance, and then you don't have to make a payment out of pocket, right?
Well, yeah, like a personal check and sending it to people first and everything, because the university will continue to pay its employer share of those premiums. But if you have employees that are, you know, they're very sick, they're in the hospital, they're not thinking about that and keeping that coverage going, it can cause problems. So just having some sort of minimal amount that would cover all of their insurances is very important.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Could you just add maybe a little bit of language in there that explains that? Because it was just put in there without any...
Yeah, maybe we can get Ben to... Is he here today?
He's here.
Yeah. Okay.
There might be something on the website, because that's not particular just to faculty, so they may even have something on the website for all of them.
Putting you to work.
That's right.
Yeah, because it says in there, in an amount necessary, so... I mean, the rates and things fluctuate, right? And so, do you want to lock in?
Insurance doesn't fluctuate, not unless you have a qualifying event, I think, right?
Well, but each employee will have different benefits. You know, somebody might have individual coverage, someone might have family, somebody might have just health, somebody might have health and dental and, you know, just other benefits.
There's a statement.
Yeah, so that was our concern with that.
Okay, we'll look at it.
So I think that's the major changes. I mean, it was about
extra
space.
I think it's per case.
Okay, and Barbara's pointing out an extra end parentheses on page 10, right above 17.11, and must be 17.10E after official emergency closings. There's a closed parentheses without any rhyme or reason.
Okay, and on my copy, on page, I can't tell what's been. Something's been marked, and I don't know, I'm assuming it's being marked through, but because it's black and white and I can't tell what all this is. On page 4.
Ah, right, thank you.
Yes.
All right, so this is where we needed to have a discussion with you about the same-sex domestic partner, that phrase. Mm-hmm. And so Lee was going to address that because he has a pretty good grasp of... We started wondering about civil unions and
common law marriages.
Yeah, common law. We started going into the weeds on this. So I'll let him.
Well, I don't know if this is the right place, but in other articles that we looked at, same-sex relationships or partners have been deleted. And we're wondering why is that? Given the nature of civil unions today, and do you recognize civil unions as positive, can be a same-sex partner, but what a distinction?
Well, we do not recognize, as Charlie and I were laughing about earlier today, saying UCF is in favor of marriage. We do not, if you know, we don't recognize domestic partners of opposite sex. So if I have a domestic partner who is a male, I can't insure that person on my health insurance. And the only reason we made an exception for opposite sex was because they did not have the ability under law
same sex
to get married. So now that they do, They have to suck it up like the rest of us and get married if they want to get the benefits.
I was looking at, sorry, just a legal point that made me know that common law marriage is recognized in Florida if you have a common law marriage recognized in another state and then you move to Florida.
Right. Well, it may be
a spouse. It's marriage.
That's your spouse,
right?
Spouse.
So that's your understanding. That's spouse.
That's spouse.
Okay.
Yeah. But so domestic partner. I mean,
common, same thing. Common law would now apply to if they have their status from outside of the state and they moved here.
If it's recognized.
Common law recognized. Yeah.
Yeah. If it's recognized under law.
Right.
But you know that was the thing before domestic partners. Of same-sex partners weren't recognized under law under any circumstances in the state of Florida. Now they are. But, you know, same-sex heterosexual partners are not recognized in our under law or in our...
You basically have to be married, but legal, basically.
Yeah, you got to be legal. I said...
Okay, well, that's why that was highlighted. We wanted to ask about that. That's
We were trying to treat everybody the same.
Right.
So that's why we highlighted domestic partners.
I suppose
partner
if we were going to be super liberal. Well,
that's why you were also asking about domestic partner in 17.7.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same
and
thing.
And it's in the appendices, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the definition. Which
we have to go through and clean up some of that stuff. But that's...
That was in our proposal.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have to.
It's more of a reminder to us to remind you that it's in there and that we need to, whatever agreement we make in one, we need to make sure it extends to all the others. So that's what we'd like you to consider. I mean, do you have other questions for what our thinking was as we went through the work in progress from the last time? I'm not sure it was an official proposal. Charlie and I talked about it's more of a work in progress.
Well, we have some things to talk about. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely.
Definitely.
Sorry, there was one thing you guys were talking about last time, which was the sort of fostering, when somebody sort of fostering lots of kids. We looked up the definition, as far as we can tell from looking at a few definitions. Becoming legal guardian is a much more complicated procedure than just fostering a child. It's when this person is placed in your care permanently and not expected to ever go anywhere else.
Well,
so the people who were fostering repeatedly wouldn't be, that was one of the concerns you
would not be covered under that,
yeah.
No. No, I mean, we want the situation where you are, it's not that much different from adoption, except that, you know, you may not be doing it out of because you're just desperate to have, or really want to have this child, but you're doing it because this child has been placed in your care due to usually unfortunate circumstances. So, okay. Time for a caucus. You've got 23, we've got 17. We'll work on those, and when we come back, we'll...
Okay, stop recording there.
And look at another.
There's three of them.
Yeah.
Thank you. Stop recording on all
three.
I have
no idea.
Stop
them.
Okay, the guy who can't see the...
See, that thing just stopped that one.
I see a pond. Hit the pond.
Yeah, there's a big circular pause button, and it should just stop. Moving forward, when you hit it once. If you hit it again, it starts recording again.
I think it stopped. It's flashing.
No. That's flashing is good.
Flashing is good?
Okay.
Did you do the same
Well, we're just going to leave it here.
Yeah,
but I wasn't sure I'd done it.
No, it's still recording. Okay.
You can put them in your pocket.
Okay. It's recording.
Hmm? Was yours? Okay, sorry.
That was recording.
Okay, back on collective bargaining on October 22nd, 2015. Where do we want to start?
Might as well start with the money.
Might as well start with the money. Okay, well, actually, we had a question for you.
Okay.
More about the language than anything else. So at several points in here, like in 23.4A, mm-hmm. on the first, second, third, fourth, fifth line, there's some there's the term in unit gets employed to an employee.
Mm-hmm.
And so an employee, by our definition, is in unit. And so we're trying to figure out, is that a redundancy or is there a reason that that?
It's redundant. Mm-hmm.
It's redundant. Okay.
We talked about that last time, I think.
Okay. We're just making sure about that. And so the RIAs are just a non-starter, no matter.
They are for now. I wish. I mean, I think I have seen some good ideas coming out of those committees, but you know, they have not. They haven't bubbled up to the provost yet. So, sorry about that.
Well, I just thought I'd try three times. And if I struck out a third time on that particular issue, then maybe we would relent for now, but
that is high on his agenda, I will tell you that, because he's hugely in favor of increasing the research productivity of the university. He realizes it's a problem.
Okay.
This is something he inherited from the prior provost and doesn't feel like he can short circuit the process.
Well, it's more that the issue is that you know, the research productivity has gone up exponentially, but the number of awards is flat, and that's really killing us retention.
It's not
wise.
Only the faculty who are complaining about that.
Oh, yeah, I know. And then we had the dates that were on there. Okay, so I think those are our major questions. We'll come back with a proposal on this particular one. I think we're in pretty substantial agreement on the amounts and things like that. You know, to be perfectly transparent about things, we'll add a Me Too clause in just because of past experiences.
Well, the problem with that parity clause is it's illegal.
That's not my understanding.
Well, it's my... you know, Mike Matamore's not going to let us put that clause in there, and I'm not either, because if... Now, look. Now, I mean, not mean what that sounds like. I'm lecturing. That was...
That's okay, Sherry. We've been at this long enough that you're entitled to a few passes. Don't let it bother you. Don't let it bother you.
The police have already closed, so there's no possibility they're going to get reopened, and they closed at 3%. AFSCME hasn't even come to the table yet, and Lord knows when they ever will get there. But they're not going to get more than 3%. So 3% is going to be the amount, and nobody's going to... Nobody ever gets more than the faculty.
No, that's not true.
Why we... It is. The only time that happened was when we went to Impasse, and you guys missed out on that $1,500 bonus payment, and that was due to issues with Impasse and problems between the leadership, but the president never ever gives more salary money to anybody else in the university than the faculty. He just doesn't believe in that. Now, he believes in making everybody the same, but he doesn't believe in doing that. So, you know, would you like...
Well, then that language shouldn't bother you.
Right. It doesn't bother me, except that I don't think it's legal.
Oh, it's legal.
And I think that I think another union could file a ULP on us if we did that.
That's not our understanding.
Well,
not at all.
It may not be, but you know, I don't know what to do other than, you know, give you a sign my name in blood that we won't increase it. That we won't give anybody else any more money than you, which I'm willing to do.
She gave blood this morning.
I did.
Oh, you said you were sick.
I am.
So you probably don't want to drink it.
Yeah. No,
I'm worried about being injected into somebody.
Okay. So if I understand you correctly, you're talking about transparency. What you're saying is the only place that we're apart is on the Me Too clause. Everything else is something that we could move on.
Well, and the other thing that we'd like to see is what some of the other things are, like 17 we're still talking about. So,
sure.
You know, for us to do our duty for our members, you know, we have to see what all the pieces are ahead of time, so they sort of wrap things up.
In the past, what we have done occasionally, if I know you probably remember this, we have done like a package, a bundle, and say, okay, we'll agree on all these things. Okay.
Yeah, that's what we're thinking about. Just because otherwise we'll get in trouble for our unit if we do something that's dumb.
Well, we will too.
We're getting like to a critical point though with 23.
Timing, yeah, because
if we don't
meet the November 19th board meeting, we're not going to. They don't meet again until January 28th, which none of us want to do. Okay.
And well, then you have ratification.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think we recognize that we're close.
If we can get close enough, maybe we even could schedule another meeting. In between now and the next scheduled one, because the next puts us like 2 days before the board meeting, which is going to be impossible, or something like that. But let's.
Is it that close?
Yeah, we're.
It's November 19th. It's on the minutes.
12th.
The 12th.
Yeah, that is pretty close.
Yeah, that is pretty close because they like to. Because remember, the Labor and Comp Committee has to approve this first, and then it goes to the full board. So. Okay.
We got an hour. Let's get
moving. We do. We are, I have to say, we are disappointed in 17 because we feel like we moved a lot in your direction last time. And we said consistently that we have to find some way to pay for the unused sick leave. And I understand why, I mean, you know, I think it's going to come sooner or later, whether it comes this round of bargaining or not. But if we're not going to get rid of sick leave, then what's an alternative for that? Any thoughts?
Oh, for the parental leave?
Yeah, for the parental leave, yeah.
Well, the cost is relatively small. It's going to be about $250,000 for the faculty, for our bargaining unit. And so the university has within its budget far more than that, because in the last 6 years, $190 million has gone into unrestricted reserves. That says that the amount that's been spent is more than the amount that the university's taken in. It can cover that amount.
Well, actually,
multiple
that's not
orders
the case,
of magnitude.
When this came up a few meetings ago, we met with Tracy Clark and looked at what's going on with the budget. And what are called unrestricted funds just means it doesn't mean that those are unencumbered funds. They are all distributed to the units down to sometimes very small amounts.
We can show you the actual charts, yeah.
There are pie charts that she showed us.
Which if we'd known we could have brought. But unrestricted is an accounting term of art. There's certain terms of art like in law and other things that it does not mean unrestricted in the dictionary definition of it. Those monies are actually allocated out to all the units. What we have in reserves right now at the university level is about half of what we typically try, what we want to keep in reserves. We just barely meet what the state is requiring us to meet right now.
Right, so, but even in the most recent budget years, the amount mm-hmm. that's been spent has been far less, millions, tens of millions of dollars less than the amount budgeted. So there's a surplus that's sitting in there, and the cost for this program and the cost that we've heard from other universities is about $250,000 a year. That's a very small amount.
Well,
that's a very small amount.
I guess I just want clarification. So are you trying to say that you're willing to offer family leave benefits only if you take something away from what we currently have?
Parental leave benefits. Yes, we are. I think that the furthest I would be authorized to go would be to say, and I have only had this on a verbal authorization from the provost. I haven't gotten it in writing, and I want everything in writing before I put it on the table, is that we would do what South Florida originally did, although South Florida has now gotten rid of all sick leave payout, what FSU does, what Florida to a greater degree, Florida is actually more restrictive than FSU or USF were. What the schools that currently do this, that have not gotten rid of all sick leave, which includes FAU and now USF, is when you retire or leave the university or transfer, whatever, when you leave active employment with us, The amount of hours that you have used for parental leave will be get deducted from your final sick leave and or annual leave payout. I could probably go that far, but that's as far as I'm going to be able to go. And I just have to lay that out right now. And that is the most generous, I mean, that is the, that was the standard around the state. Now, it is not even the standard because UF, not every place offers parental leave, but of the places that do, UF says they will give you, they will advance you the money, and you have to pay it back within 6 to 8 years by using your sick leave or annual leave. FSU says the same thing that we're saying. You can wait till you leave and we'll deduct it from your payout. And that's what where USF started, but they have now eliminated all sick leave payout, as has FAU. So we're trying to be, until we can see where we're going with this, that's going to be pretty much the best we're going to be able to offer.
Well, one of the issues that we have is this notion that as the university's budget continues to escalate, the amount that's provided to faculty for salaries and benefits remains a fixed amount. It should be going up at the same rate that everything else is going up at the university. It shouldn't be getting constricted.
Well, except that that's our budget goes up at the same, but our expenses also go up. So our budget, we do not have this huge surplus. And if we need to bring you in detailed information, have Tracy Clark come and talk to you for an hour about it, I'm happy to do that because she spent almost 2 hours with Chuck and me. And I think we can show you that, but that is simply not the case. And our biggest expense, and you know, other personnel, faculty are the number one priority for the provost in terms of spending money on. So every bit of performance funding that we got from the legislature last year went to hiring faculty, tenure and tenure track faculty. It did not go to, I didn't get any of it, and neither did anybody else in the university. Most of the money that we're going to get this year is going to go to faculty. So nobody else is getting this benefit. You think there are not a ton of people in the, a lot of people in the university who would love this benefit? At least for the moment. I mean, at least right now, this is going to faculty. You know, I mean,
we're trying to be
very
generous. That's the only group that we represent.
I know that.
We would love to be more supportive to our staff and our adjuncts.
I get that. I know that. That's your responsibility. But I'm just telling you that the priority for the money goes to faculty at this place other than buildings and stuff, you know, tax, paying, keeping the lights on. But the faculty are where the money goes. You may not see it, but...
Yeah, we have a different assessment of that.
Well, I understand that, but you've gotten... Even if we do a deduction at the end for sick leave payout, what you will have accomplished in this contract, you will have gotten a lot of stuff in this contract.
A lot of stuff that other universities have had for years. And so if you look at the university years that UCF is behind on this, it's in double digits.
In terms of parental leave, no, it is not. That is a relatively new concept at most universities in this state, and not all of them have it at all.
But six or seven of them do.
Six
and
or
times
seven
two or three years or 4 years of having it, that's double digits. And the tuition package is the same. It's six or seven universities have had it for multiple years, and so you're in double digits again.
So I just want to make sure that I'm understanding so that we all know where we're standing and what we're talking about. So Sherry's question to you was, you know, if we're able to offer this benefit, where do you expect the funds to come from? And your response is from our budget. And you don't have any other concession that you're willing to offer within the contract. Is that what you're saying? I just want to make sure I'm understanding clearly.
We're saying that should be the first place that's looked at.
First place looked at.
Right.
Okay.
So there are trade-offs that can be made in these other areas that where money may or may not be encumbered. And especially because the amount that it would cost to provide this benefit to our bargaining unit is relatively small. It is not... in a very high
range. So are you suggesting maybe we could put a cap on the money then, which I don't know how we would do, because we wouldn't want to offer it to only the first five people that got pregnant.
Well, that's
right?
that's what USF did. When they, you talk about us being behind the curve with USF, yeah. They started out at only...
USF has a cap of 1%.
They have a cap, yeah. And they have now eliminated all sick leave. They started with a cap and paying it out of your unused sick leave. So
They're an independent bargaining unit.
I get that. But you brought them up as saying that we're behind all these bargaining units. But the people we're behind are people, we're not behind Florida, and they are much richer than we are.
But I think we understand their position, which is
We do.
We hear what you're saying. We want us to take it out of the budget instead of this article, and we may... not be in a position to do that. We're telling you how far we can go. So as long as we understand that, then maybe we... Are there any other questions in the article that we need to talk about other than that?
No.
Well, were we okay with the language Mason had suggested then for 17.7?
Yeah, I don't think we had an objection.
We had no problem with that. I think
can you
we're.
Bring back to me where you thought
I said. Chuck has it written down somewhere.
I can actually tell you.
No, Chuck will read it. What we think you said.
Yeah. Just to make sure what you think I said and what I think you said. I see what's the same thing.
The dean or vice president shall either approve the modified work plan or work in collaboration with the supervisor and employee to reach an acceptable solution.
Was that roundabout?
That sounds exactly
right. Can you
sounds
repeat
great.
That again?
One more time. And then, Ross, I think you had a question about one of the things that they struck from their proposal.
Actually, can I get the language from Chuck first before we move on?
The dean or vice president shall either approve the modified work plan or work in collaboration with the supervisor and employee to reach an acceptable solution.
Okay, thank you.
Ross had a question.
I just wanted to find out your intent on something that you struck out. So on 17.7.
Page.
Okay, go slow.
Page 2, 17.7.
Okay.
You added in the third line down, there's where it's parental leave options, during the 1 year period following the employee becoming a biological parent, et cetera, or legal guardian. Right?
Right.
And then on the next page, page 3, section C3, you struck the period of parental leave shall begin no more than 2 weeks before the expected date of the child's arrival. So with the combination of those two things, adding the section that says following the employee becoming a biological parent and striking the no more than 2 weeks before, am I correct in assuming that your intent is that there shall be no family medical leave before the child is born or they become a legal guardian? So now it's all following, is what I'm saying. It seems to be.
Okay, so let me see what we did. All right, I see what you're talking about in the first one. In the second instance, I didn't quite find where it was.
I'm sorry. It's down near the bottom.
Near the bottom.
Number 3, and it's totally struck out.
Thank you, sure. Yeah. The reason we struck that out was because we thought we had captured our intent in the first paragraph, or the preamble to 17.7 there.
It's a difference of 2 weeks right now between the two. Right?
And I'm just trying to find out what your intent is, right?
Yeah.
Well, so we're trying
like them to be able to take those 2 weeks. So we were wondering, you know,
when they need it.
Yeah.
Well,
if they were to need it, we want them to be able to take it.
Obviously, you've not been pregnant, so I'm trying to.
Last 2 weeks can be.
Don't
You don't need to be politically correct. Assume it's on your mind.
No, I worked right up into the end, but some people aren't able to carry the weight, especially if they have twins or something
right.
like that. So we wanted them to be able to take this 2 weeks should they have the leave to do it and if they wish to do so. And I think FMLA gives them that right to do it, so we were wondering if it would be okay to
reinstate. Oh, I see, because it's in the unpaid leave.
If you would reinstate that language, if you would agree to reinstate it based on the fact that we'd like them to be able to do that.
We would certainly be in agreement.
Okay, I think that answers the question, Ross. I don't think that was there in the
end. If that three is reinstated, I think it's okay because then it clarifies that it's allowed 2 weeks before.
Yeah,
right. But
okay.
when you took out that,
yeah,
it,
have
that
to.
We'll take that into account when we look at it, that it's okay with you to put that one back. We're not apart on that.
No. We were trying to streamline the language, and in doing that, we made an unintended.
Sure. Okay.
Had an unintended consequence.
Ross, do you have any more questions on that?
On that one, no.
On that article? So I think we had 12 we had
12
talked about.
And 24 are the ones left.
24. Well, maybe.
Which do you want to go for?
24 is the longer one. Let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah, we struck it out. Yeah, thanks, Mason. 24. Okay.
All right.
It's better.
I need one of
these. Thank you.
So that's one of the ones we need to tie her in.
Yeah.
Because right. The others are mostly smaller things.
Which one are
we going to do? 24. You guys have a copy of that in there? One of the things that we did, and you know, we may have missed one here or there, but retired employees is something of an oxymoron. So because once you're retired, you're not an employee. So we just changed retired employees to retirees throughout. And we have had some controversy, as you know, over the university-sponsored email. We've had a grievance over that. I've worked with Dan and Scott on that. And what we put in here was the language that's currently in the policy. We've solved the issue of the policy notification. We're going to sign off on that today, so that you'll start getting the policies ahead of time. The issue with and we heard you that retirees, faculty members don't want to join the Knights Mail email system because that's so associated with students. Seems that people felt that was diminishing in some ways. So
it requires them to change passwords on some things, like for some governmental agencies, your email address is your password, and getting them to change that because they don't monitor their email. So you send an email saying I can't log in or whatever, and then you're blocked.
Well,
and so it's a huge issue.
You're still not going to be able to keep your current email because that is for employees, but we will change. It will be a university-sponsored email. It will have the EDU on it, and we will allow the, I think, you know, we're open to suggestions. I think there's a committee right now of retired employees who are working on it, but other people are welcome, you know, we'll bargain whatever you want to call it. The problem with keeping your current email address is that it opens retirees' emails to the public records law. It means you are now subject to that. And so all your emails would be open to the public.
The same way they always have been as an employee.
The same way they have been. But the problem with that is if you are retired, we don't have the same kind of ability to, we don't capture your email. So the way we do if you're an employee. So if you are, in order to maintain that.
Why don't you capture it? It's just under the regular .ucf.edu, so it'd be captured the same way that faculty would.
No, I mean, I'd have to have Joel come in and talk about it, but it is, we had a situation where we got into a lawsuit with someone's widow who the husband had died, and she wanted had used his email quite extensively, and she wanted access to his email. And so we had to go through, and it took us days to look through every single email that he had, redact all the information that would be public information, separate out the personal from the professional, and she didn't want to give us permission to do that. Well, so that became hugely problematic for us. It creates a real legal risk for us to allow people to continue to use their employee email address when they're no longer employees. You know, you go to any, I mean, try to imagine working for Martin Marietta or Orange County School Board for that matter, or any place else, and leaving and keeping your company email address. We're willing to allow you to have a university-sponsored email address, but it will not be housed on our server. So therefore, it doesn't become subject to, doesn't subject you to the same kind of scrutiny that it currently does.
Are there liability concerns?
Yes, there are.
Such as what?
Well, such as we got into a real scrum with this wife because, you know, if it's on our server, we consider that we own it. But we really, she was claiming that no, we had no right to get in there and dig through his personal email account because he was using it as a personal and professional account, which most people do. Mm-hmm. You know, we allow people to have what we call incidental personal use. And it became a real problem for us. And, you know, if people are representing themselves as still being employees of the university when they are not, and that happens sometimes, that can create liability for the university if they are doing things that, you know, people are believing that they are dealing with somebody who is currently an employee of the university and they're not. Then that subjects them and us to liability. So they're you know, this is not something that we did just because we don't like retired people.
right, but one of the issues that we've got is that as faculty members, folks have who are here at UCF for a long time, you know,
sure.
Every single paper that you write, you have your UCF email address on it. So that's your connection to the greater community. And so the minute that thread gets disrupted, you've lost your ability to communicate with people all over the world. You've lost your entryway into a lot of grant agencies. And a lot of faculty remain very active. You know, they're still writing grants. They're still supporting research. They're still advising students. And so
the university recognizes that. There's going to be a plan in place to help faculty migrate to the new account. So that transition, it's not abrupt. It'd be far more devastating for a faculty member to leave the university and go to another institution for some great opportunity. You still have all the same problems with all the agencies that you're communicating with. Now you've got to reestablish. Here,
those are actually easier because then you have your ORC person just do it.
Well,
that's actually a lot easier.
But that's what will happen here is that they will migrate. They will help you do the migration. It will take, I think they have it like a 6-month period where they work with you and take care of that, getting that done.
Were there available liability issues to just set up an auto forward so that emails are still sent to that address that's on the bottom of my paper and now gets bounced to whatever email address I'm now currently using? Without being stored, it just gets automatically bounced to another email address.
Well, it still comes into a university employee address, so it's still subject to all the public records thing. So we need to keep it off the university server, is what this different email domain would allow. It would never actually be on a university server, never be subject to any of the public information requests and so on. Hmm. Once it comes in here, it's subject to
the liability from the send side of it, though, not the reception. We can't control who sends us emails.
Well, no, you are also under public records law liable for what you receive.
That's a pretty interesting offer of the university.
If it deals with university business.
I mean, Sorry, John. The one of the main issues is people receiving those emails and people trying to contact them about a paper they wrote 2 years ago and since retired.
Or the data that was behind the paper
from
or something
that
like
email
that.
Address isn't as important as still being able to be contactable by people who know that that's the way to contact you.
Well, you know, I don't. No matter what job you're in, if you're continuing to be active in your professional field, you're going to have that problem. You know, what the university is saying is that at least here we will help you with that migration and give you a 6-month period of time in which we work with you to make sure that you are the people that are on your contact list will know you have a new email. I mean, you know, you change addresses, you notify the post office, and for 6 months they automatically forward everything that people send you. But at some point, you're responsible for letting those people know that you have a now permanent change of address.
So I think I hear the problem that you use your email as sort of like the pass to get into certain grant agencies and things like that. And you hear, I think, our concern of the liability in the public records request. So we'll take your stuff back to our people and see if they have an answer to solve it. But there are certain places where we can only go so far before a legal
because
has to
the
kind
legal,
of solve.
Yeah, and
so, yeah. But we'll but take that the, concern me, back to them and see if they have
right.
a way to address it.
But let me suggest something else. And this comes from theory in lots of different areas. That if the ratio of the benefits divided by the costs is greater than 1, that's the optimal strategy to follow. So in other words, if the benefits of faculty retaining their email addresses, which are substantial, outweigh the costs, which may or may not be substantial, because I don't know what the cost of that issue was, and it seems like it was a one-time issue, then you should make no change. If the liability is horrendous, then you should. But it sounds like this is a one-time incident, sort of a weird case, and we've seen as we've been bargaining that we do our best to try to cover every base. And then almost always when these one-off things, we end up coming back to status quo. So I'm just suggesting that as a way of thinking in evolutionary theory, ecological theory, economics, this is how everything works. This is the optimal solution, is you try to maximize your benefit-to-cost ratio.
Right. I like that model. Why don't you guys kind of elaborate on what some of the costs might be?
Part of it is we don't understand it. And it's because that's not our universe,
so
right?
Costs?
So, because the cost of doing the public records request is borne by the person making the request, right? So
well,
the university is allowed to recoup the reasonable cost of that.
Yeah, but
not the time.
Not that you never get back the time. I mean, you get back a certain amount of money for the time, but you can only charge a percentage of the time, and you can only. But at any rate, it's not a monetary cost.
Yeah, there's an element of risk that's not in the formula.
Well, no, I'm including the risk as
well,
part of
the cost.
The cost is. But there's perceived risk and there's true risk, and those things are often quite different.
Right. Well, there's a very genuine risk that any retiree can misuse an email.
But there's the same risk for any faculty member or any employee.
But a huge difference
is. Any employee outside our bargaining unit, even.
An employee who's covered by this, who misbehaves, can be disciplined.
Well, an employee
can't.
Well, but they also have agreed to abide by the university's computer.
Okay, and we can shut them off from the computer, but the damage is done. Whatever they did with their account, disclosing student record information, whatever it may be, whatever's opened up the university and made us potentially liable, that damage is done. We can make sure that with that particular person that it might never happen again.
Right, the same as with any other employee.
Right. But an employee, the university still has some right to discipline. There's some authority that the university has over them as employees.
Are you still preventing the damage in any way? You just get to swap people for making the damage. And current employees, but retirees, you can't get them back for it. That's
I just keep thinking about that kid in the towers that they didn't kick out of the room when he had the gun. you know. But anyway, we probably should move on. Yeah. The time we have
left,
we probably
should make
sure.
Can I bring up one other potential cost for this that I was just thinking about? Say 50% of our faculty retire someday, and the other 50% end up going to another job or leaving before retirement or whatever. I work in the tech area in our college, and that storage cost, because you have to store these emails for 7 years. Yep. So if you think about every 20 years, 50% of the people are retiring and being able to keep using their email. I'm just wondering about, and I don't know that number, but I'm wondering.
The cost of storage hubs anyway. So.
Yeah, that's the thing. No. Is that there's a theorem or a law, I can't remember what it's called, about how, what is it?
Moore's law, I think.
Yeah, about
the cost
how.
Cost of storage hubs every 18 months.
Yeah, so the cost of storage is continuously.
The amount of storage doubles for the cost of every 18 months.
But I know I'm paying a lot of money right now in my college, out of my budget, for storage costs. So I'm wondering what the actual cost, if there, okay, you well, know, I assume that there's going to be a cost for storing all this data, and if someone's able to use it outside, you know, that there is a true cost there. Right.
Thank you.
There's a cost for 6 months of transition for every retiree as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, and lost benefits. Yeah. So it diminishes your benefits. Well, anyways, I mean, we brought that one. I know that one's been in grievance, and we've tried as best we can since day one to stay away from things
well,
that are currently
actually,
in grievance.
Well,
so.
Actually, I even put this on the table because I did not believe it was a bargainable issue, and I did that as
the courtesy.
At the end of the court.
So.
Okay, so were there other things that you wanted to?
Yeah,
yes.
On the 24-6,
just briefly, phase retirement. You understand everything in there, right? With why we would be eliminating that program.
I like it out, yeah.
We still need to do a little bit more of our due diligence on this particular one, but we appreciate the information that you sent to us.
Okay.
We may have more questions, but we also may not.
Okay, on the tuition waiver issue, you asked for aspirational language because we're not at a stage where we can do this yet because things, well, I'm not going to get into that.
That's okay.
Because I know what your response will be, and you're right. But what we are committed to doing, and we believe we can do this fairly quickly through university policy and certainly get it up and running by 2016 is to allow employees to assign some or all of their unused portion of their to family members, defined as spouses and dependent children under the age of 25 who depend on their eligible it's awkward because I want to say eligible parent or parents, but because of the way it's in the contract, employee or employees, depending if it's a parent or parents, for more than half their financial support. And because right now we can't go to we have to stay at a somewhat under space available basis. We can't allow people that, we can't give away seats that we can otherwise put paying persons into. But right now, we have a lot of state employees who are not UCF employees, but they work for the state, and they take courses at UCF, and they register ahead of our own employees. We register dead last, so I've talked to the registrar, and he said it would be no problem to allow our own employees to register 2 hours ahead of the state employees, so that gives us a window of a little bit better availability, and we will continue to discuss other benefits, including the TEP program and whatever else comes on the table.
Okay, so two questions more for clarification about that. So you're sure that it's okay for us to be able to register 2 hours ahead of other state employees? That's not running us afoul of other statutes?
The registrar assured me that that is the case, and he said that it used to be the case for years here, and he doesn't know why it was changed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Would there be any possibility of allowing that window to be a little bit broader, to give people a little bit more time?
I can ask him.
Would you mind asking him? Just
What were you thinking of suggesting?
Like 3 or 4 hours or something, or half a day? What's your...
It's currently 3:30, isn't it? 3:30 the day before classes start?
Yeah, well, see, what I'm immediately thinking of, because I'm dealing with Australians, is people who are on a different continent, and they're dealing with time differences, and it can be hard.
Well, most UCF employees are here.
Well, but not always.
Or at least their dependents are here.
Yeah,
right.
Well,
and if they're looking to take classes, that's good. What kind of time frame were you thinking about, John?
Something bigger than 2 hours. I couldn't. Right. We'd have to ask some folks that
I'll
what they
see what
think
the maximum
would,
he thinks he can do is.
Yeah, that would help us. And then the other question for clarification on this is, so this would be limited to spouses and dependent children, mm-hmm. as opposed to immediate family members, which is what we'd suggested, which I think
your definition is also non-supported too.
Okay.
The definition of immediate family.
Oh, right, to immediate family.
Grandchildren. So you've got a definition of immediate family that's broader than the definition of family.
Oh, I didn't thought of the grandchildren.
Did you say immediate family in there?
Yeah, we had immediate family in ours.
Oh, but we don't in ours.
Okay.
Okay.
I think we might be willing to expand it to grandchildren, although I'd have to check on that. I don't think we would include brothers, sisters, grandparents, because that gets into a very broad category, but which is how our immediate family is included in, is defined in Article 32.
Remember that these people have to be verified as relatives, so right now it's very handy if the insurance covers them, and that makes it a lot faster because that's already passed, but if the insurance is handled by someone else, those children have to be verified that they are children and things like that, and that's going to take a lot of paper. Now when you add grandchildren, that adds an entire another layer of checking and such.
Children under the age of 25 who depend on the parent for more than half their financial support.
Right.
That's asking a lot of parents to provide more than half of their child's income in order for them to qualify for tuition.
What did you believe?
You said that you depend on the eligible employee for more than half their financial support. So if I'm an impoverished instructor with very little money to pay for my children, I've at least got this tuition credit, which you're not taking away from me if I'm not able to provide half of my child's income.
No, I think they're talking about the child's income, not the parent.
Yeah, for more than half of the child's income has to be paid by the parent to qualify you. So impoverished instructors are going to have a harder time.
Or does financial support refer to?
It's financial support. This is the same thing that kind of like the IRS uses. If you're going to claim somebody's a dependent, you have to provide 50% of their financial support. This is very painful for me. Last year I lost one. This year I'm losing another.
I think you're reading it backwards.
Okay, right. But more so, how would you validate financial support? I mean, what documents would be required to make the kid eligible?
If you're having them under your insurance policy, that's done, right?
Yeah, you have to verify that. Yeah.
For example, I have a son who's 23, he's now working full-time. He's going to come off my insurance on January 1st.
Gotcha.
The way insurance works now is it's 26 and under, and it doesn't even matter if they live with you. I don't even think it matters if they're married now.
I'm sorry, what was the... So that was for insurance?
Yeah,
to fit underneath the insurance umbrella.
Mm-hmm. It's 26.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even matter if they're married, so it's not necessarily...
You mean if the child is married to someone else, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but what I'm thinking of is situations where you've got two parents and where one of them, say, works for a healthcare provider, so they've got really good insurance.
Yeah.
So they would be under the healthcare, the spouse who has the healthcare...
Mm-hmm.
Position mm-hmm. and not on UCF insurance.
Mm-hmm. That makes it
that
more
means
difficult.
We have to research and find it and get all that information.
So, okay, so it doesn't exclude those folks.
No,
it just means there's
more paperwork
okay.
for us.
I think we were looking to match.
We're trying to figure out how this is going to work.
If I'm right, we're trying to match the language to the current insurance guidelines that will make it easy for us to say, oh, you're under this person's insurance,
but
push the button. I think
that's
what we're
trying to do. Yeah, but we'll check on the more than half the
financial support thing. Because that language, I didn't really understand it either.
We pulled that out of somewhere.
Is there a reason why it's restricted to 25 and under as opposed to slightly higher?
That was what we were trying to ask the insurance.
I think we could get maybe.
I'm thinking if you're going part time, it may take a while for some of our.
Well, yeah, but that's. I mean, maybe we. 26, I think, is the age that the ACA covers up to
right.
that point, and we
right.
might be able to move up to 26, but I think we would not want to encourage people that to just hang around forever and get their parents' benefits.
I've got a kid who goes off to Harvard and then wants to come to one of UCS excellent graduate programs, and they're just too old enough to cover now.
Right.
It would be nice to encourage the loyalty in all kinds of ways, including grad school. But
well, I'm thinking if you can afford to send them to Harvard.
Well, except for I think Harvard covers the total cost for anyone whose parents combined insurance is under $100,000,
yeah.
because their endowment is so big.
Yeah, their endowment is so big. Our endowment is not as big as Harvard's, unfortunately.
Well, I think
it's a good start.
I think I should say here that. We appreciate the effort that's gone into
right.
this because this is really vital for our bargaining unit
yeah,
and for
know.
Retention. And even a faculty member whose daughter goes to one of our competing state institutions,
yeah.
and I won't mention the Seminoles by name.
Well,
one of the things he pointed out was that there's no tuition benefit to a faculty member's child staying at UCF. And so that kind of breaks the chain of loyalty and the brand recognition and stuff. And so I think this is
yeah.
really important.
And
it's
Florida
important.
State University doesn't offer any kind of tuition, any
they're
kind of transferability.
Yeah.
yeah.
They're one of the few.
Well,
and they're also sinking in their
University
world
of Florida doesn't either.
Which of
either
the universities do participate in the tuition waiver program?
Which schools
do?
Which ones do?
It's easier to say which ones don't.
No, it isn't. It's actually Florida, FIU
does.
You know, I'm trying to look at.
Ross wanted to say something.
I want to make a suggestion in order to move this along.
Gulf Coast.
Ross wanted to make a suggestion.
Go ahead.
He wants to move us along, so let's make him make his suggestion.
We put this. The reason we added this was so we would respond to what you asked for, which was some sort of note saying that we were working on this and provide a timeline.
Right.
Is there any way we could possibly be more vague in this to make it where these discussions could happen later about what age someone is or, you know, and just say that we're working? Because that's what we wanted to do in the first place, was just say that we're going to work on this. We wanted to be a little more specific because that's what you wanted. But
mm-hmm.
maybe there's a way we can be a little more vague so that those discussions about ages and timelines and how many hours ahead of time and all that can be worked out at some later point.
Well, and that's so you're actually anticipating one of the things that we have talked about on our side, which is for Article 30 when we get to it. You know, these are the sort of the maintenance articles we have to do at the end.
Yeah.
Adding Articles 8 and 24 to the list of. That would be reopened, 8 because we're kicking the can down
yeah.
the road, and that sort of formally recognizes that
yeah.
that we're procrastinating or punting or
mm-hmm.
or being deliberate or whatever nice term we can think of, and then 24 for this reason.
Well, my understanding is this is going to be in university policy, though, not
it is.
In the bargain.
So we could at least get the policy. We're going to get the policy up by the fall, so.
Well, I think if you looked at that same article, it has a duration. We would start bargaining for, what is it now, 3, 8, 23, and 24 in March
mm-hmm.
of next year. So
right.
that's a good time for us to be picking it back up again. And so if you can, we can craft an aspirational statement. We can do that over email if you're open to that.
Would it be aspirational to just remove the parenthetical goals and leave it on totally late?
I don't know.
Define the definition of family member.
Yeah, well, we could.
Well, but that's look at how quickly we were closing in on. Let's leave it in. We've already made some progress on that, and so we've already.
Okay,
in 3 or 4 months, if it's not in there, it'll be out of my brain, and I'll have to be getting it off my notes. So it's better to leave it on paper.
I can tell you now the number, the universities that do allow it. FIU, Florida Gulf Coast, West Florida, in North Florida.
Ooh.
With the exception of FIU, nobody that's...
No peers.
No peers.
Hmm. Well, maybe this will be the example to get some more of their peers involved.
But a comparison peers, do Kent State, Portland State,
well, yeah,
Indiana
State, but they have a totally different, you know, a lot of those are,
and there
they
were,
have different state laws,
and there were quite
too.
A few here, because we had a whole table that we put together.
Oh, well, we do too. We've got a ton of them out of state, but...
But even in state, my recollection is it was six or seven.
Well, FIU, Gulf Coast, that's two, West Florida, three, four, so New College...
In fact, the...
No, even New College doesn't, which is surprising, because they usually let you do anything there.
They have 70 faculty.
But anyway...
We don't usually count New College.
Anyway, this helps, because you know, several times in the course of negotiations, you know, the university's indicated that they're working on things, they have committees reviewing things, and that's all fine and good, but we need to have something... You know, that puts words in the deeds, and that's doing that here. And this is something I think that we can sell to our bargaining unit, that we're making tangible progress. University's committed, they put it in writing. That's a step forward.
Yeah, we're trying to do the same thing with parental leave. Get you a program that's at least as good as everybody else in Florida.
Well, we're trying to.
And better than most.
Well, and if we can do that, I mean, that helps us. Competitive wise, I mean, that's the other issue.
I'm
telling you the same things you already know.
We already know, yeah.
We're on the same page there.
So many of these places that we're comparing ourselves to have so much more money than we do in terms of endowments and just age.
Well, now the endowments is what kills us.
It's what kills us.
We got to get our endowments. So
you didn't have any questions, sorry to interrupt, about 2410. That was the only other thing that was a large strikeout, and we all understand that. That takes care of 24, I think.
Yep.
Okay.
Did we want to go over 12 really quickly? Because you didn't really get a chance to respond to that, John. And I think we have three copies of 12 available. Non-reappointment. And then we probably should look at dates.
I was going to say the same thing, Charlie.
Okay. You know what? I think I probably just have enough for the people at the table on
your
side.
Just,
and we didn't
just
make
a
enough,
few.
And I just
I don't need one.
We can
you
share
it
down
one.
Here.
Okay, and I'll let you two share, and we don't need to have, you don't get involved in non-reappointment, so.
Is Charlie
and this
here?
Is one that we passed out.
That's the same one.
We passed out before. So it's the same one we've had. It's on the collective bargaining website if you want to bring that up, because we've already put it on. It's already out on the table. But I just wanted to talk over some things, I guess. Last time we talked, in 12.1, that looks like it's added, but it's really just moved from the second page, page 2. And I think there's a lot of headers so that are added, but that wasn't, I don't think, a problem with anyone.
Right.
So where are we still apart on this so that we can talk about it?
I think we're on, it's probably three, well no, it's probably, good grief, 12.2E2 is probably,
so,
or E1 and 2.
And just to revisit that, since this is what I have to do with.
This is Charlie's favorite article.
We suggested changing it from the bright line to revert back to the previous language that was in the book that we gave two full semesters, because that enables us not to single out the people on H-1B visas, which we heard you and understood that that was a problem. So this puts everyone in the same bucket and handles everyone appropriately. The 3 years also fits with the university rhythms that we have, and it gives us a chance to evaluate employees. Donald Trump recently said that for all H-1B visas, he wants to raise the prevailing wage astoundingly high, so when he's president, be aware.
We're all laughing as he keeps climbing in the polls.
You can see that it is something that gets the attention of the politicians. There's a move now to try to get them to employ Americans first, and one of those ways they do that is raise the prevailing wage. When we have employees currently in our positions, in order to retain them, we will have to meet it. So if we are able to give two full semesters notice, one of the things Barbara said that we heard, she says just pay them. So by giving them two full semesters, we will accept the burden of that cost for that period. But we'd like to have a little more freedom there to give that two full semesters notice there.
But part of what was struck out was the timing of the notices. And,
right.
And we had implemented that in the last full book session,
right,
if I remember.
Right, and what we found is that for the people with prevailing wage, it doesn't work. Because they're not out there looking for other jobs. The prevailing wage hits us at whatever time of year. And we ended up holding the bag for someone for two full years, for four semesters.
The other issue is that we originally did that May 7th because there was a perception that the hiring cycle was during a certain period. It was the height of the hiring cycle. But we seem to be, from my conversations with deans and the provost, the hiring cycle in academia now runs almost year-round. I mean, it's not, there may be peaks of times, but it is not as narrowly defined as it perhaps once was. Maybe because there's a glut on the market of people looking for jobs, I don't know.
Well, it still has its own cycles
sure it
to it. And so, you know, that particular clause really was quite important because of the timing, and that's why we agreed with you to put it in last time, or you agreed with us.
Yeah, it was your suggestion.
It was our suggestion. We agreed. The two sides agreed.
Yes, we did. And we have been trying it, and it hasn't been working particularly well, especially when we have the pressures of the prevailing wage.
Okay, but there's a way for ECF to avoid having that happen, and that's to use the Labor Department's database to determine the prevailing wage, because once you do that, you've got a safe harbor provision. So they can't raise it on you once you use that, their database salary.
That's not true. No.
That's right off their website. It's off the Labor Department's website. I'll be happy to forward you the link to it.
No, we have their website too. We also have our own immigration. We also have Fragerman, who's telling us something entirely different. So,
Fragerman told us we could release people. It was this provision that kept us from doing so.
I'm sorry, who's Fragerman?
Fragerman is the attorney.
He is
the firm,
the immigration firm that handles H-1Bs for employees and also handles our immigration questions.
So they didn't have any problem with us releasing employees because with the prevailing wage, we're permitted to do so by law, but this clause in the collective bargaining agreement kept us from doing so.
All right.
We've got to communicate something here.
All right.
Because this is coming straight from the Labor Department, and that's what they're saying.
Right.
I mean.
All right. We'll bring in our, if we have to go through all the legal explanations, we'll do it.
Okay, so let's take a look at some dates then, John.
So the next date is when? The 12th, right?
So do you want to start looking on the 1st? Is that when you... Excuse me, the 2nd?
So Monday?
The next day is election day.
Right.
And Sherry and I leave for a conference on Wednesday.
Actually, Sherry and Chuck.
Election day.
And I'm in a conference on the 3rd, 4th, and
10th. Are there elections this year?
I have election day on November 3rd. Buddy Dyer.
Local.
I saw his sign.
Local.
Right.
Okay.
First Tuesday in November, it's going to be an election.
Yeah.
Something like
that. I don't think so. I don't have November 5th.
Oh, you got it. Right.
It's you all, huh?
Right, sorry.
What about the 3rd? Because if most of us are open on Thursday afternoons and maybe Tuesday afternoons, are you guys open?
It might work for me, yeah.
Tuesday would work for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What?
Early in the morning.
Excuse me?
No, early in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Of course. I don't know that I'll be. I don't know if I have elections in my area. I haven't gotten any information, so. I just saw the people waving and honking and all that, so. So tentatively, shall we say 1 to 4? tentatively on November 3rd?
Sure.
3:01 to 4 p.m.
All
right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
That's okay with you two guys?
Yeah. Yeah.
And really, maybe.
And Mason?
That's good okay.
Lord knows whether we'll get Mike here or not, but.
Well, if he doesn't come, it's okay.
Oh, but we didn't tee anything today. It broke
we
our
didn't.
String.
We,
but we're close.
We
we're
tried.
Close on a bunch.
Yeah.
All right.
Hopefully we can wrap this up next time.
Yeah.
That would be very nice.
That would be very nice.
Yeah.
I think we would all, we're all about that.
Can we get the provost or someone to spring for a party for the folks just in this room once
Where
we...
Where would you like those funds to come from?
He doesn't have his own little fun box.
His own little slush fun box.
Okay, well, so should we go off the record at this point to discuss our party?
Yes, okay, all right, so...
Okay.
That one's blinking.
How do I stop it? It's pause, but not
well,
stop.
Well, hit pause.
Yes, so stop recording and turn it off so I don't waste the battery.
Yeah, how do,
oops.